Welcome. This is Debbie Worrell. Excuse me. This is Debbie Worrell, and this is another edition of the Beta Author Expert Interview Series. And our guest today is Bob Bly, who is really a legendary direct response copywriter and someone I've just had the good fortune of knowing. Bob, I don't even know how many years, but and I'm not even sure why.
Between us, it's decades.
Okay, we won't.
Maybe I shouldn't have revealed that.
Okay, well, we're starting off in full transparency here, which was something that Bob mentioned right before we hit the record button. So let me tell you very briefly about Bob, and after I finish, Bob, you can tell me if I've left something out. I went to Bob's LinkedIn page, and what I love about it is so spare. It basically says, Bob Bly, February 1982 until the present. Parentheses, 31 years and 2 months. Freelance copywriter specializing in direct response, high tech, and business-to-business marketing. So more than 30 years, more than three decades experience. And then basically that's all it says. And then it says you have a BS in chemical engineering from the University of Rochester, which I love as a background for a writer. And, of course, for everyone listening, there's tons of information and free resources at your site, which is bly.com, B-L-Y.com. If you're introducing yourself to someone else, what have I left out?
No, that's it. People, I used to, in the pre-internet days, when most of what we did was on paper instead of the web, I would say to people, do you know how you get a lot of junk mail at the office and at home? I write your junk mail. But now, of course, it's all done online, so we don't call it junk mail anymore.
That's funny. It reminds me of my daughter, who's a physician and a neonatologist, and she takes care of preemies. And her cocktail party line is, you know those blue babies? She says, we make them pink. So
that's great. I love that.
And it's pretty good, actually. So that it is helpful to have a shorthand. You know, I have a whole bunch of questions about writing books and getting your perspective and wisdom. And you've written, I think, over two dozen nonfiction business books. Is that right?
I've written 80 books.
Oh my God! Well, I'm way off. Well, by a factor.
You're way
okay.
off.
80 books. Okay. So I just thought, wait, before we start talking about the books, tell us a little bit more about what it means today in 2013 to be a direct response copywriter and kind of what you do and how, in fact, it does, at least maybe even in your head, how does that relate to writing books? Because it's different kinds of writing. So, you know, tell us, what does that mean? What do you do today?
Well, in the old days, we did mainly paper direct mail. I still do direct mail. I still have clients who want paper letters. I'm writing a letter now for Jack Welch, who was the CEO of GE. But mainly clients want online marketing campaigns, which primarily consist of email marketing messages driving people to a landing page where they can either make an inquiry or, in my case, buy the product.
Interesting. Yeah, well, that makes total sense. So really, there's two parts to it, and they are different, actually. One is the email message, which is a text message, and then it goes to an associated web page. And we won't,
right.
won't get into the details of that, but those it is actually interesting because people, I think, read that a little bit differently the way they read an email in their inbox and the way they read a web page, which, of course, can be HTML and formatted and colors and subheads and stuff.
Yes, they're not the same. And now the sort of mini trend in landing pages, at least for consumer products, is video landing pages, where instead of having a print page, it's a video. So I'm doing a lot of that today as well.
But for Jack Welch, this is a written letter for him. I don't know. Maybe I should.
For Jack Welch, yeah, it's aimed at higher level management, and it's a two page printed letter.
Oh, that's neat. That's really neat. All right, well, jump right in here with your first book. As I recall, because I did a little research here, your first book had a great title. It's called The Elements of Technical Writing.
That's correct.
And tell us a little bit about this book and tell us how your goal for the book became clearer out on your own.
My goals for every book virtually, not always, but virtually are the same. I learn something that I feel then compelled to share with others. So in this case, I was a newbie technical writer for Westinghouse, and I had used the Elements of Style by Strunk and White as a sort of a writing guide in college. And when I got to technical writing in the corporate world, working for an aerospace company, I noticed that a lot of the writing issues that I dealt with weren't covered in this more general book, The Elements of Style. So I proposed to a publisher that I write The Elements of Technical Writing. We called it the Strunk and White of technical Writing. And McGraw-Hill hired me. They bought the idea, and that was my first book, which was written in 1981 and published in 1982.
And then you went out on your own the same year.
Yes, in February 1982, my company asked me to relocate, and we didn't. I was engaged, and we didn't want to go, so I resigned, quit, and said, "What could I do? What of the things that I did for my company could I do freelance?" And a small part of what I did was writing some copy, and I said, "That's what I'll do."
I love that, and you just plunged ahead. But you mentioned in another interview you did that when you went out on your own, you suddenly realized, or you had this realization, that the book, which you now had on your hand, was sort of the ultimate calling card. I think you even called it a union card.
Well, Jeffrey Land, who was a marketing consultant, been around for decades, had a quote I liked. He said, "A book is a brochure that will never be thrown away." And so, yes, I would go on meetings with potential clients, and as we discussed the job, I would then, sort of at my close, hand them this beautiful little slim hardcover book, and in many cases, I could see that had a big influence on their decision whether to hire me.
And I think that's still true today.
It is totally true today.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's just, for better or for worse, the writing the book makes you the expert.
Well, that's what you're all about. You help people become recognized experts through having written a definitive, in your case, short book on the subject.
Well, that's what this current group, we call them beta authors, because we're all just plunging in and doing this and not trying to make it perfect. And also the goal for the program is to end up with an e-book and you're not worried about getting it printed. But we're all struggling, and actually I'm writing a short book along with them, with my authors, and my short book is on how to write a short book, which is not a sexy title, but I think it's actually something people want to know. How do you write a short book in 8 weeks? And what we're struggling with is the writing process, going through the different steps you go through to actually get to, get beyond, if you'll pardon my language, the shitty first draft.
Right.
That Anne Lamott, the famous writing guru, talks about.
Mm-hmm.
So you can help us a little bit, but tell us a little bit about your book writing process. I know you said in the past that you like to alternate. You'll work on your copywriting assignments, and then you might put that aside and work on a book. But tell us a little bit more how it
right.
works.
Well, my situation is slightly different than what you described, because in my case, the 80 books, which are physical books, they're paperback or hardcover in some cases, are published by New York City publishing houses. So before I can write the book, I have to write a book proposal. So that's my first step. I write a book proposal to sell the idea to the publisher. And in doing that book proposal, the key to it, I found, is to write a very detailed content outline for the book in advance of actually writing the book. So once the proposal is approved and purchased by the publisher, I already have a detailed, very detailed outline of what's going to be in the book. So instead of starting from scratch, writing it is literally a matter of filling in the blanks in that content outline, which will have somewhere between 7 and 15 chapters, and in each chapter will have subheads for 5 to 7 sections or subsections. And so I take that file and I put the content outline and I put it in a Word file that I title book, or the title of the book, and then I spread out those chapter headlines and those section subheads, and now I just start filling in and writing. So it's already, the contents are predetermined, and the order of the information is predetermined, which makes it a lot easier, because one thing that gives people anxiety is saying, well, what do I do? What do I do next? In my case, I can turn to that outline and start filling in any section I want.
Well, so tell us how, what process do you go through to get to the outline slash book proposal? Because that's really tough, particularly if you know a lot
right.
about a topic. Tell us some of your secrets and tips and tricks for that.
Well, what I do is sit with a pack of small index cards, and I write on each card one topic or subtopic that would be in the book. So if it was a book on technical writing, it might be doing writing letters of transmittal for reports, or handling equations in technical writing. The topics don't have to be of equal weight or any relation. I just write them one after the other on cards. And when I run out of what topics that I can think of, you know, and I have everyone I think, I put those cards out on a flat table and organize the piles by subject. So one pile might be proposals, anything to do with writing proposals. One pile might be to do with anything with grammar or punctuation or whatever the topic is. And so I organize the stacks by chapters. I put all the cards relating to that chapter in that stack. I then reorder the stacks to what I think is the best order, and sometimes that's predetermined by, let's say, a process. Technical writing was not really a process book. It had covered a bunch of different topics, and so the order was not that critical, so it was sort of subjective. But on the other hand, I wrote a book on how to be a freelance copywriter called Secrets of a Freelance Writer, and that was how to start, launch, and run a successful freelance copywriting practice. So that was in order. It was chronological. So that the order of the chapters were determined by the process that I was teaching. And then I organized those cards in that way. I then type up a preliminary table of contents. And then I might go to some of the competing books on the topic, not to copy them, but to check through them and say, is there anything that I missed? And that's a good check. You get three or four or five competing books and say, you know what, I completely forgot to talk about vlogs, video blogs, so I got to add a section on that.
You know, that's brilliant. It actually is it is exactly what we've all been working on for the past week or so. We've called it, for no particular reason, we've called it list making.
Mm-hmm.
And got the term from a guy named Mark Levy, who's actually not too far from me. He's in New Jersey, and he's written this wonderful book about business writing called Accidental Genius.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you the link if you don't have
it.
Yeah,
I would like you to.
And it's terrific. I mean, he basically it's sort of to help people that aren't writers write different kinds of content. And mm-hmm. list making is actually the same thing. You start with the big topic, and then he says, you know, use stickies and put them on a whiteboard. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Index cards and just keep thinking, you know, big idea, little, you just list topic after topic after topic, and then you lay them out, as you point out, either on your dining room table or on a vertical surface and see what relates to what, because your brain, in a way, can't see that until you get it all out. So thank you for saying that, because you've now reinforced what we're doing. So I know we're doing it the right way.
I think you are.
I think you told me in one of our earlier emails recently that you'd written a book that was, I might have written this down wrong, but you'd written a book that was 800 pages long? Was it something like that?
I wrote one book that was over 800 pages long for Prentice Hall decades ago, called The Advertising Manager's Handbook.
Wow. So tell us, what's the difference between writing, and I know there is a difference, and there really is, it's almost like a mindset and maybe even a process. What's the difference between writing a short book, say one that is less than 100 pages, and some of your books, I suppose, are e-books, like PDF e-books, but
well,
a long book.
I don't count any of my, you know, I also have e-books that I've self-published, but that's not included in that total.
Okay. All right, so what's the difference between writing a long book and a short book?
The short book is usually laser-focused on a single idea or topic. I mean, a good example of a short book author who's very successful and very famous, and I'm sure you've discussed him, is Seth Godin. He takes one idea in marketing, and he blows it out to about 100 pages, so it's thoroughly covered. In a large book like the Advertising Manager's Handbook, it was meant as a comprehensive reference to everything an advertising manager should know, so it has many separate chapters, each, you know, a self-contained unit on a specific topic.
Yeah, interesting you should mention Seth. I call his books riffs. They're sort of like his blog posts,
right,
blown up. And one of the things that drives me crazy is he really is quite a good writer. He's very fluent. He's very it's fun to read. He sort of grips you in his prose, and you kind of move right along. But in his recent books, he does not use a table of contents. So I've actually asked him, in an interview, well, so Seth, how do you do this? Do you just sit down and write it? I mean, you must have a table of contents or something. And he said to me, Debbie, he said, just believe. He said, I just sit down and I write it. I'm thinking, great, that's not helpful for the rest of us. So that's a particular kind of short book. So actually, I don't think anyone in our group is probably trying to write that kind of book, because I think you kind of need Seth's brand and stature to sit down and do a 100-page riff and give it a beautiful cover and sell it. And frankly, I think a number of his latest books are all quite similar. They're just different versions.
They strike me as very similar, yes. And they all have these weird titles like Purple Cow, Malted Milk Sundae or whatever they are, you know.
Yeah, Meatball Sundae. So I guess
Meatball
you're not
Sunday.
I have to say, in terms of sort of comparing, you know, gurus of writing, I would say you and Seth are probably on opposite ends of the spectrum. So, but that's good. This is helpful to us.
If you have a minute, I'll tell you my Seth Godin story. I read something he wrote and was very impressed by it. So I sent him an email saying, you know, I always thought you were kind of a pompous blowhard, pseudo-intellectual, but I read your latest article in Entrepreneur, and I was quite impressed. So I have to say I was wrong about you. And then he replied, he says, I don't think I have ever received such a backhanded compliment in my life, but thank you anyway.
You mean the recent article?
He didn't write that. That was about him. It was some other article.
It wasn't the recent, I think you...
No. You're talking about the cover story of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Interesting. Well, you know, one of the things I do like about it is he does respond to his email, and that sounds like Seth, and I think it's hilarious that you wrote that, because everyone else is sort of, you know, sort of kowtowing at his feet, and I love him, but I...
Well, I don't know if you know this, but some manufacturer, actually, and they sell it on the Internet, on Amazon, there's a Seth Godin action figure.
Yeah, I think he probably commissioned it. Believe me, he knows. All right, so okay, that is a very good answer about what a short book is. You've only, as I recall, you've only worked with a co-author once or twice. Maybe it's only once.
No, actually, it's more. I probably at least half a dozen times.
Okay, but you do say that you hire, and I find this very interesting, researchers to write sections of your books that you're not particularly interested in. And then, of course, then I guess you rewrite what they submit to you. But I think that's a cool idea. Tell us how that works.
Well, that came about as a result of having to write the Advertising Manager's Handbook. You know, I had been an advertising manager, so I felt I knew a lot about it. But then I had to do a chapter on telemarketing, which I had never handled for any of the companies for which I had been an advertising manager. And I didn't know anything about it. And I said, why don't I just outsource this? You know, so I found a writer who knew marketing, and hired him to write that chapter. So, you know, occasionally on books, I'll outsource chapters on things that are outside my quote-unquote core competency and have other writers do them, and then I'll edit it to ensure that it flows in the style of the book, and I'll do it that way.
Well, I think it's a great idea. And it's interesting that we haven't talked about this a lot in this sort of laser-focused beta author program, because there's not really enough time in 8 weeks, but, you know, hiring a researcher to help you with examples, case studies, anecdotes, stats, you know, whatever it is actually something that a lot of authors do, and
yes,
it's something that we should all, you know, consider, because just, again, to act like real entrepreneurs, which is what book book writers are these days.
Well, why should you waste your time doing internet research when you can farm it out for $25 an hour?
Well, there is a question whether they'll actually give you what you want. I mean, I did
You find the right one, and they will. I have a great researcher whose name I don't share, and, we work together, every day practically.
But it's interesting you talk about rewriting the, this is just an aside here, rewriting what they give you. Because when I was writing the corporate blogging book, I remember just this feeling of being overwhelmed and exhausted. And then it dawned on me, I thought, well, wait a minute. There's this section just like you that I'm not totally fascinated by. I'm gonna hire this researcher and have her do a draft of it. So at least then I'll have something to start with. And I did. But what she gave me was so terrible, I thought, oh, okay. I think I just have to do this myself, which is why, when you get a contract with a big New York publisher, that usually they want, that's why they give you the contract, because they think that you're going to give them something really good. So, all by way of saying that none of this stuff is perfect. These are all imperfect processes, and it depends
right. Who
it is. And frankly, if the person were that good, they probably should be your co-author, but...
Yeah, I don't have my researcher do any writing. If I need a ghostwriter, I hire, a person who's a decent professional writer.
And have you ever done that? Hired a ghostwriter for one of your books?
Well, for my e-books, they don't actually – I publish a line of e-books on marketing and sell them on the Internet, and my name – I'm not the author. The person I hire is listed as the author. I'm listed as the editor. So I'm up for – I don't – so in a sense, no, they're not ghostwritten. They get the byline. But, yes, I do hire in my Internet publishing business, I hire people to write e-books for me because the money in that for me, I'm not writing that for prestige or status. I'm doing that to make money, and the money in that for me is in the marketing. It's not in the writing.
Well, tell us a little bit about, and I'll just put this under the big header of promotion, what's your secret weapon for promoting your own books? And I bet you're going to tell me it's your email list, which is what you use.
You're totally correct, of course. I have, like you, an email list. My list isn't huge. It's a mid-sized list. It's 65,000 names, and we send them multiple emails a week. Half the emails they get are pure content messages for their education or entertainment, and the other half of the messages are pure sales messages trying to sell them one of our products.
And when you say our, it could be one of these little e-books on a topic, like give us an example that you've
I did one that sold pretty well, I think it was this week or last week. This is one I actually did write myself called Super Productivity for Writers. It's about how to write twice as fast in half the time.
Oh, my God. Bob, I might have to go look that one up. I do get your emails, by the way, and they are very seductive because you're a very good copywriter. And then I have to stop myself from buying them because then I would buy too many things.
People do. I don't want them to. I mean, sometimes I tell people, they will tell me, I bought this, and what should I buy next? I said, stop buying stuff. Do something. Don't just read about it. Do it.
Right. Well, can you tell us, I know you start. I can't remember how many years ago you started this internet publishing.
2004.
And how does this compare with your copywriting business? Is this a huge percentage of your revenue?
It's not the majority, but it's significant income. It's, it's multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. But I make more copywriting.
That's
copywriting is my core. Internet marketing is my second business.
Do you write all the, because it's a lot of writing, all the emails for the...
I write, the one thing I do write all of myself is I write all the emails. I also write all the landing pages for my products. So I write all the copy for my internet marketing business. What I don't write is all the products.
Well, I hope everyone listening will go to bly.com, bly.com, and sign up to get on Bob's list, if only to see how he does it, because he's a master. And whether or not you ever buy one of his products, you will see what, mouth-watering copywriting is, and particularly online.
Yeah, best way to sign up for the list is go to bly.com/reports. That's the sign-up page, and you get four... a free bonus report, so you can see how I put together a bonus report. Because whenever I sell an ebook on the internet, I always give at least one bonus report as a premium.
Quick question: have you ever used the approach of a bonus report to sell a hardcover book? So tell us, do you do
it? No, I don't produce or sell my own hardcover books. The publishers do that, and you know that's not an internet marketing model. You know that's a an Amazon / Barnes and Noble / a bookstore model. So no, I don't do that.
So you're not really involved in promoting your actual.
I mean, I get as involved as I can, but unfortunately, as they say today in jargon, business jargon, my bandwidth is limited. So there's only so much I could do. You know, me
yeah.
and the couple of virtual assistants I have are already stretched to the limit. So, you know, I always wish I could do more, but I have to be careful where I put my time. And so, you know, I certainly look out for opportunities to promote the books. What I do for my books is you've seen these Amazon bestseller campaigns. You know
yep.
what that is.
Yep.
I do that for my books. And I outsource that. I have someone do it for me.
Wait, no, actually, what do you mean by I'm not, now I'm confused.
An Amazon bestseller campaign, and we actually have an ebook on how to do this, how to make your book an Amazon bestseller, is where you do a coordinated campaign of emails to your list and lists of affiliates or joint venture partners or cohorts so that hundreds of thousands of emails hit the internet the same day telling people to go to Amazon and buy your book. The effect of that is that it has a good chance of driving your book up to number 5, 4, 3, 2, or 1 on Amazon that day. And I have done it with success. I did it for
Yeah.
So you've seen this.
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you, as a recipient, get 4 emails or 5 emails from different sources all on the same book in the same day, you know the author is doing an Amazon bestseller campaign. That's what it is.
Interesting, because, you know, it's not – but you do need to have – well, it helps certainly if you have your own list, and your list is what I would call quite large.
But it's not your list. You can't do it alone with your list. You can't even come close. You've got to make alliances and get out and meet people. You got to know Deb Weil. You got to know Bob Bly. You got to know Seth Godin or people like that who have big lists and will be willing to do this with you. We've calculated that the combined names on all the lists that you do it to should be about 1 million.
Whoa. Huh. Well, I know Seth Godin doesn't do that.
No, he doesn't do that, but I meant someone of his.
Because he is
yeah.
Seth Godin. But,
yeah.
I mean,
He doesn't believe in outbound marketing.
Yeah, I think he can do things his way at this point. But do you think this is something, I mean, it's expense? Well, you're saying that there is no expense because you're just sort of
there's no, the expense is the favor. If I do it for you, then I expect you to do it for me. That's the expense.
But you do have to have your own list so you can offer something.
You have
in return.
You sort of have to.
Yeah.
You might be able to get away without it, but it'd be hard. I think you do have to have your own list.
Couple more quick questions. As a copywriter, I'm guessing that your book titles, which are kind of like headlines, must be very important to you. What's the secret of a great book title?
I don't know that I have a secret, but I try to have a grabbing title and then a plain, clear, descriptive subtitle.
Mm.
That's one technique I use. But each of mine is different. For example, when I wrote my book on white papers, there was only one other book on white papers, so there was not a lot of competition, so I called it the White Paper Marketing Handbook, because I felt if I just said white papers, people who were interested in that would be attracted to it. On the other hand, when I did my book on how to become a successful freelance copywriter, I wanted to interest the widest number of people possible, including those who necessarily didn't think they would be a copywriter but wanted to do something in writing, and I could attract them to the copywriting field. So I called it Secrets of a Freelance Writer to create the greatest curiosity, arouse interest. So different titles have different formulas.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the number one thing is it has to set up an expectation that you're going to reveal something really, really interesting and useful, and it has to kind of make you think, oh, I got to know that. So yep. as soon as you say secrets of a freelance writer, I'm thinking, oh, I got to know what those are.
Yep.
So.
Well, like Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. When you hear that, you read it, what do you think? Well, you think, what are the 7 habits you have to
what
know?
What are they? Yeah, I got to know.
Yeah,
something.
I don't know, but yeah. you want to know. Yeah.
All right, well, last question, and then maybe we'll take a couple questions here.
Okay.
So you've written 80 books. You're not writing – excuse me, you're really not writing books for the money. So why do you keep writing books? And it's a lot of work. And what books do you still want to write? What's kind of there in your
– Well, the problem is with your question is that I actually can't – book publishing has changed enormously since I started it in the early 80s. And at one time – I felt that if I had a good idea, I could find some publisher to do it. Now I can't. Now publishers have this thing, I don't know if you've talked about it in your group, called platform, which means they won't hire an author to write a book on a subject unless she has a platform in the subject. You can't have a platform on 40 different topics, so I'm limited in that I can only write books in marketing, entrepreneurship, things of that nature. At this point, I think I would have fun writing books on other topics, but it's just not going to happen. That ship has sailed. So the answer to your question, what?
Well, unless you say to yourself, screw the New York publishers, I can write something smart and stylish on whatever the topic is, and I'll self-publish it. Certainly I'll self-publish it as a Kindle e-book. There's virtually no expense involved. And do it because I want to do it. I mean, you have to have a name, and you have your email list. That I mean, you know how the numbers work. If you sell it for $2.99 or more as a Kindle ebook, you get 70% of the of the price. And if I forget who your last publisher was, is selling a book that they've published for you as a Kindle ebook, you end up, I think you get like 15% of the cover price, because after they break out, you know, what they owe Amazon and the percentage they keep. So since you are very good at figuring out how to make money, you actually could make a lot of money publishing a Kindle ebook.
Well, that certainly has occurred to me, and it certainly is on my to think about list. I am interested at this point, having done 80 books in the traditional way, I am very interested and open. Maybe I should take your training. I am very interested in open. No, I'm not joking. I am very interested in open in alternative publishing options.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I think what's amazing is I first started doing this program a year and a half ago, and I think the landscape and the mind shift that has occurred since then amongst established authors like yourself it's amazing. I mean, I remember a year and a half ago, people said, well, you know, I don't think I would ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, well, wait a minute. For established authors like Dan Pink, for example, although I did talk to Dan Pink about it a year and a half ago, would he ever consider self-publishing a book or a short book? And his answer was he loved the idea, but he was under contract to, I forget who his publisher is, and might not be allowed to.
Yeah, and he's very successful with the traditional model. He's very well-published.
But as you know, there are some big name writers who are not wanting to get locked into the kind of contract with a big name publisher that doesn't allow them to do this kind of experimenting on the side. But
yeah, Stephen King.
Exactly.
Stephen King.
Yeah, I mean it's a lot of fun. It's a revolution. So I have opened the lines, and I know we have two very smart beta authors on the line today, guys. What would you like to ask Bob Lai?
This is Dale, Bob. I really appreciate your comments today. And I was looking, as you were talking, I jumped over and was looking at your site. And one of the things, I think you really talked about it, I was just going to ask you a little bit more about it, is that this thing about being really straightforward and brief seems to be an organizing principle that you have. I just glanced quickly at a couple of, I guess it's blog entries, and I mean, they're just really, I mean, you know, I don't, it looks like just very, very direct and to the point. Is that, I mean, do you literally use that as an organizing principle as you think about putting your work together?
No, I would just say it's my natural style is to be concise and simple. Is to not wander or write or be verbose. So I don't think it's an organizing principle. I think it's more of a style consideration.
Well, just that little, the thing you did about I think it was on GM and it's like that sort of thing about wow, you know, it's like, you know, it communicates a lot in a very brief few words.
Yeah, I mean, if you can, to me, if you can do it in four sentences, don't do it in 20.
Right. Thank you.
Hey, Bob, you know what? I forgot to ask you about blogging, because this is something you and I did not agree about at first, and now you have been blogging for a number of years, and one of your books, actually, it's one of my favorite titles, is it Blog Schmog?
Something like that, yeah. I was wrong about blogging. Now, I am not an active blogger. I do have one, but it just hasn't sustained my personal interest. That does not mean doing it is not worthwhile. On the contrary, I see a lot of value in it to a lot of individuals and to a lot of corporations and small businesses. So I was wrong on that one. It's just something that's not my favorite thing to do. I don't read and follow people's blogs, as good as they may be, because I find it time consuming, and I don't really much contribute to my own blog. It sort of lays neglected. I have a similar feeling towards social media, which is another thing is that I think absolutely has value, but I don't really participate. I don't tweet or go on Facebook or spend any time on LinkedIn groups.
Well, that's where you're just like Seth, so that's pretty cool.
I did not know that.
Les, I know you're looking there. Have you got a quick question?
Yeah, actually, I have a couple of quick questions. First, just want to say thank you for your time this morning, Bob. I really enjoyed what you've had to say.
My pleasure.
Early on, you mentioned something that has been sort of an obstacle for me, where you talked about one of the reasons that you write is it's the opportunity to learn something new and share it.
Mm-hmm.
So the mental obstacle I hit with that, you know, I have my outline written, and there's a good third to half of the topics where I know a little bit of information, and I think I know what I need to know, but I've never actually done it. So and then I have a hard time finding that authoritative or authentic tone that I want in the writing. So when you're learning something that you may know at a shallow level, but you want to communicate deeper, how do you get past? Maybe the easiest way to see it is, do you encounter fear of being wrong when you're exploring something new that you know you're going to share with an audience?
Well, I think what you mentioned about the difficulty in sounding authoritative when you haven't done it is solved by, there's an author named Nick Osborne, Usborne, and I heard a talk he gave, and he said you can overcome that problem by choosing a different voice. So one voice that people choose is the authoritative voice, saying to the reader, I've done all this, I'm the expert, let me teach you. That's a problem if you haven't done all of this. But he says there's another option, which is to take the, I know something about this, but not everything, and I'm learning it along with you. And whatever I learn, I'm going to share with you. And that way you have the pressure to be authoritative and pretend you know everything is off. So it's really the point of view or the voice you take that can solve that problem.
That's very interesting. By the way, I'll make sure you all have the link to Nick's site. He's another long time copywriter type, Nick Osborne, that I know as well. That's very interesting. I'm learning something. I'm writing this down. I'll learn along with you. And of course, one of the ways you can do that, Bob and Les, is point out maybe the basic framework of whatever it is the topic is, and then point people to the websites or the books where they can, quote, learn more or go into more depth.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. I certainly agree with that, and I do that in many, many books.
And then hopefully this is a quick question. Just by You know, I'm a big science fiction fan, and just the sheer volume that you've put out over your career reminds me a lot of Isaac Asimov.
He's my writing hero.
It doesn't surprise me given the amount of...
Wait, did you say who?
Yeah, Isaac Asimov.
Asimov.
Yeah. So what is your daily and weekly routine like? Like when you mentioned blogs kind of being a time sink that you're not interested in, and probably you feel the same way about social media. So when you sit down to actually, run your business, which obviously includes a lot of writing, how do you think about it in your head at this point in your career?
Basically, I break the day up into three segments. The first third or so, I work on a major copywriting project until I get tired of doing that. The next third, I switch to another pressing copywriting project that also has a upcoming deadline, and I spend about a third of the day on that. Now the last third of the day, maybe the last quarter, but let's say the last third of the day is my playtime. I can work on my internet marketing business. I have a manuscript of an ebook an author gave me. I have to edit it. I can write one of my email blasts for my list. I can work on my monthly e-newsletter issue. I could sit down and work on one of my books. So that's my playtime, and that's how I do the day.
That's a great answer. So, Les, I think what he says is he writes all day long.
Yes. That's all I do. Because here's the secret of that, though. The secret is I don't go anywhere. My wife hates this. I don't go to meetings ever. I don't leave the office. I am at this desk, 10, 11 hours a day, whatever it is. And that's by choice. I want it. I prefer to be in solitude. And I like being in this room, and I like sitting at the PC. I mean, I don't even use a laptop because I like my desktop. I mean, I have a laptop, but I don't use it, so I don't go anywhere. You know, people who advertise, become a freelance writer, there are a lot of courses on that in the internet. They're always talking about take your laptop and write on the beach. That would be a nightmare for me.
As you look there, Bob, there's a short book for you. The totally uncool guide.
That is it. That people, I am. I am very, old and set in my ways, and I don't like a lot of cool and hip things. I mean, just as an example, I don't have an iPod. I don't have an iPad. I don't have a smartphone.
You don't?
No.
Well,
people say to me, how could you not have these things? I say, because they're all for mobile people, and I'm not mobile. I never go anywhere.
See, are you saying you don't have a cell phone, or you don't have a
smartphone? No, I have a cell phone, but that's for emergencies when I'm in the car.
Okay.
I don't use it. I don't give people that number or use it. It's just in case I have to. I get stuck coming home. I can let my wife know. But I have a cell phone, but it's not a smartphone.
See, that's a book title for you right there. How I Make $500,000 Plus a Year Without a Smartphone.
That's actually not the worst. Yeah, it's not bad.
I'm sorry, but I was going to say that I think on your homepage it talks about how does, and then you list an impressive group of people, make money, and then it goes right to a very sort of, copywriting. I mean, and I was thinking as you were saying that, it's almost like that you keep yourself very focused on a very specific area that you have spent a lot of time getting expert in, and not getting pulled away by some of the latest shining toys, I suppose.
That is so accurate that I can't tell you. That is, as they say, spot on. I stay focused, and I just am not interested in these other things. And I find them, as you had said, or the other guy had said, time sucks, and I stay away from them. Because I really value more than anything else my time, which is the most limited and irreplaceable commodity you have.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you. I think we should end on that very high note, and note that we all have a few book titles in hand for you. And just thank you so very, very much. It's
been my pleasure.
Out of your busy day to talk to us, and it was just delightful.
No, I enjoyed it. Thanks, Deb.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye. Debbie?
No, I think we'll hang up. We can talk again at four. But is he not cool? I mean, is that just love it?
He's great.
This is. This is part of what you know. I think about right when Bob was coming on. One of the things that you know, as I'm writing my book, that's already helped me in terms of a goal for my books. It's helped me think about how to help people from a business standpoint, you know, taking all this knowledge and putting it in a plan that I can actually turn into a business. And what he just mentioned in terms of what he's doing is something that my industry has a real hang up about, you know, direct marketing, asking people for the sale. And you look at Bob's website and, you know, I work with some of the best web designers on the planet and they will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars putting together these websites that are just absolutely gorgeous and don't make a dime.
Yeah, of course. And by the way, you're looking at the upgraded version of his site, I can assure you.
And it's ugly. If I were to show Bob's site to my web design friends, they'd poo-poo it. This is wrong. It doesn't do this. It doesn't do that. And it's so